This is 69 the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 11 years now, first online and now as a podcast. We cover what's new and interesting, and we filter out all the BS. This podcast gives listeners a chance to hear at length from people and companies who are making a real mark in the industry with new ideas or just old-fashioned hard work and smarts. You can listen to episodes online, get it from iTunes or Google Play, or use your favorite podcast app to pull down the RSS feed. We now have a companion podcast called Projects, hosted by my longtime industry friend Michael Tutton. That show is all about digging deep on the creative and tech behind some landmark projects. 69 is sponsored and supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. Steve Rickless, one of the founders of the UK firm Triple Play, believes like a lot of people that technology is converging and thinks his company is in a good spot because it already offers a converged product. Triple Play started in IP television for the corporate market, but by 2008 was doing a blended hardware and software solution that did IPTV and digital signage off the same user experience and running off the same boxes. While startups have been trying to beat low-cost Android set-top boxes into being signage players, Triple Play has for years been using the kinds of commercial-grade set-top boxes you'd find behind hotel TVs as digital signage players. From his perspective, the way forward is one solution doing many things for enterprise customers. We spoke recently at Infocom about the company's roots, the size of business these days, and where things are heading. The chat was on the show floor, so there's lots going on in the background. Steve, the best thing to do to start off with is tell me about Triple Play, what all is involved with the company.
Okay. So Triple Play is a global provider of IP television, video streaming, and digital signage solutions. We've got offices strategically placed around the world. So we have offices in Australia, Singapore, Dubai, headquartered in London, Spain, and the US. Mm-hmm. And that allows us to offer a consistent service and platform to our global clients, which range from banking and finance in particular, education, multinationals, and so forth. Mm-hmm. So that's how we structured the company.
Do you lead with hospitality and lead with the IPTV?
We lead with it. We believe that we actually lead with a combination of the two. Mm-hmm. So we believe that the world of AV and IP are merging. Mm-hmm. And that what customers are looking for is a platform that will do many, many things within the enterprise. Mm-hmm. So that the old days of having one vendor specializing on TV, one on signage, one on video, etc., are changing. And now customers are looking for a manufacturer who will actually deliver an integrated platform mm-hmm. that will provide many services mm-hmm. and integrate into the enterprise with all their other third-party systems. And that's our differentiator is we will provide a complete IP video solution to our customers.
And how did all this play out? Like, where did the company come from? And did it start as IPTV and kind of end up as well in digital signage?
Probably a little bit different to some of the people. So I'm one of the founders of the company. My background was actually, I was one of the pioneers in delivering video to the home. Mm-hmm. So I worked on some of the main pioneering projects for Time Warner in the US, British Telecom in the UK. These were the first projects where we delivered video over DSL in the days when a DSL modem cost £20,000, not $20.
Yeah.
So life has changed quite considerably. Mm-hmm. I was able to use that experience to really get into the enterprise market. So we launched our first platform in 2005, mm-hmm. which was delivering IP television services to a PC within hospitals initially, and then into hotels. Mm-hmm. And we quickly added in a video platform to do video on demand. Mm-hmm. And then within 2 or 3 years of that, we realized actually that customers want signage as well. Mm-hmm. So we launched our signage platform within 2008 at the FIFA World Cup in South Africa. So we were one of the first manufacturers to offer an integrated signage mm-hmm. and IPTV platform within a large venue. And we've then taken that into the enterprise market as well. So we then got a couple of banks on the back of that mm-hmm. And grown it from there. And what I have noticed that's interesting is some of our competitors who specialized in one area are now moving to offer both products. I mean, I actually had one come and see me today and they were boasting about their signage platform. I was quite honest, I said, yeah, your platform's less than a year old. My platform's 8 years old, 7 years. I've been doing it a long time. In fact, that's we're already there on that. We're already looking at the next thing to do within the platform. Obviously, I didn't share that with him. All right, but he's boasting, I'm thinking, your product is half the feature set of mine. It's not been matured. You've just told me you've written it from the ground up, and it's less than a year old.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, obviously we're doing something right. And we noticed another competitor of ours has just bought a company to do the signage element because they've realised they've missed the boat, so they're trying to catch up.
Mm-hmm.
So it shows us that we're innovating quite significantly, and some of the products that we've just launched and are about to launch will take us to the next level, definitely.
So when you have a client where you're already doing IPTV for them, is it a case of you're an existing service provider, if you can also do this, that would be terrific, and we'd prefer to do that as opposed to finding in another vendor to do something else?
Yeah, well, two things. So one is interesting. I think we're like the second generation platform for IPTV. So if generation one is, so I want to do a bit of TV. I want to put it over IP because it sounded cool. No, I have to do a car, so I'll put an overlay network in. I don't want it touching my enterprise.
Mm.
And, you know, some of our other people in this space, that's what they did, and did very well.
Mm.
Then the sort of second generation came and said, well, actually, I've invested a lot of money in my enterprise platform, my enterprise network. I've got this great security, network control. I've got a fantastic network. I've got all these other third-party systems. Why am I supporting a separate network just for TV or video? The technology's there in the network to make it happen. Mm. And we've picked up a lot of business where the customers have come in and said, right, actually, can you put your system on our network? Yeah, because it's secure. We can pass all the integration tests, all the network tests, all the bandwidth tests, all the enterprise. We can integrate with all your third-party systems like your AMXs,
right,
or your Crestrons. We can integrate with your SAMLs, your LDAPs for authentication. We can track everything. And then they go, well, now you're integrated on the network. What other services do you offer? So now they've gone, it's all do digital signage, brilliant. I don't have to go through the whole process internally,
yep,
of getting you approved, onboarded as a vendor, making sure you're secure on the network, making sure you're integrated, got all those tick boxes. And because we have redundancy and resilience, full true failover, we're able to totally fail over and the system will recover and continue operating with no user interaction. Actually, now you've got an enterprise-grade platform. That's what my other systems do.
Mm.
Oh, and you can split it over across locations. And now they're coming back to us, and the latest thing we've just launched is our Citrix. Now we're doing video over Citrix. Again, this is quite a huge thing for a lot of our customers because they've got thin clients that are getting rolled out.
Right.
And now we can deliver video not only to the screen, to the big flat screen and to the desktop, we can now deliver it to the thin client as well.
Right.
I'm one of the few vendors in the world that can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just getting certified by Citrix at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And now, obviously, we've got the mobile play as well. The beauty is we've got a centralized content management system that's approved, supported on the network, authenticated, and they can just bolt on more and more video-related services,
right,
as we develop them and as they need them.
And the central management system, if you're using it for hotel-based IPTV or corporate-based, mm-hmm, or whatever, if you then want to bolt on digital signage application, is it inherent in the same system, or are you?
Yes, fully. All you do is the license. It's already,
okay,
in there.
Okay.
All right, we just don't enable it. So, right, what we do is we actually ship out our platform. When we ship it out, it has everything on it. We just, it's like a light switch.
Right.
Depending on what you pay for, you switch on the light.
Because it's cloud-based, it'll show up.
It's all cloud-based, and some of it's on, so we have an on-prem and an off-prem,
okay,
solution, because some customers don't want to go off-prem, and some do. So we support both, all hybrids as,
right,
well, because different customers have different requirements. And, you know, and whilst cloud is exciting, you know, there are still challenges with network connectivity. Whilst the US is really advanced in the world of broadband, you go to some of the other countries, like in Africa, you'll be lucky if you can get 256 kilobit.
Yes.
All right. So if you haven't got an on-net, very efficient way of delivering video, you ain't going to get anywhere.
Yeah, so. I did consulting in South Africa, and we were talking about a broad digital signage network across the country and to all their stores.
Yeah.
And they started asking about connectivity and all that, and said what we'd need, and they said what they had available, and I said, but you're a phone company, and they said, that's the infrastructure, that's all
correct.
We got, so.
Correct, so people, you know, you need to have a platform that's flexible, so you really do. I think, you know, I was with a major bank just this week, I won't say which one, and they're looking at, we want to offer certain video services into the branches, but we don't have high bandwidth to all the branches because we're all over the US. There are certain branches where the network available is like one meg.
Right.
So we need to think about video services we can deliver over one meg. Okay, we've got other branches down the road here where they've got a huge pipe with 10 meg, maybe even 100 meg, but that's not everywhere.
Right.
So you do need to have it. I mean, cloud is great if you've got loads of bandwidth. If you haven't got the bandwidth, you've got to look at that. So I think it's supporting both models that we're finding is really important.
And then how does the architecture work on the digital signage side, at least? Traditional system, you've got central server, cloud, all that, and then PC or some sort of an endpoint that it's pushing content out to, and then it plays it out. Is it different from that because you're using IP?
So we've done a few things differently. So one is we support lots of different end devices. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's certainly a shift in the market. From the old days is players, third-party players. We don't develop any hardware, so we use industry standard or telecom-grade players to run our signage rather than a customized PC. So that gets rid of all the issues you have with Windows and all the viruses and keeping that.
So when you say a telecom grade player, you mean a player that would normally be used in cable TV industry or something?
Yes, or IP industry.
All right, so not like Brightsign boxes or Android boxes or something like
that? No, not at all. And I think not traditionally. Mm-hmm. I'll go and explain our strategy and how it's changing. But we use an embedded Linux that goes to a number of telco operators. Mm-hmm. That's hardened, secure, reliable, cost effective, and just works. And it's designed to be thrown around if it has to be.
Right.
So that's how we started.
A little kick and pound on them, and they're ready for
MPEG 4
and
correct.
Handle all the different compressions.
Exactly.
And blah, 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 blah.
And then we've done now, and then we've moved forward though. So now we've integrated with the system on chip manufacturers, particularly around Samsung, LG, NEC. There's a big three screen manufacturers. We're looking at Android. Can't ignore it, unfortunately. Brightsign is coming. As well, we've got Intel-based players now as well, because you've got to have different customers have different requirements.
Right.
And some are moving to more of an integrated screen without a third-party player. Mm-hmm. Some want clever signage, some want basic signage. So I think you have to. It's horses for courses, depending on what is the deployment, and what is the use case, and what piece of hardware delivers that. Because sometimes it could just be as simple as a bit of video. And you can use a low-cost player, or it might be something that's clever, that's got clever HTML in it, JavaScript, and you need something a bit more powerful. Mm-hmm. So we've changed the client device quite considerably, so we can support lots of different devices within that. Obviously, TV is integrated because we've been doing IPTV for a long time.
Right.
So TV is fully integrated into it, and they can flip modes. So one of the things our customers like is you can tell our devices to be a digital signage box, say between 9 and 12, and at 12 to 2, when people are having their lunch break, we can flip it into a TV mode. Mm-hmm. And we can give them full control. And they can then actually use it as if it was a TV portal.
Right.
And at 2 o'clock, we flip it back to digital signage mode, disable the remote control, and go back into push mode. So they quite like the fact that they've now got a platform that's doing more than one job.
Right. And so from the perspective of something like a hotel, how does that work in terms of, can you actually turn room sign into digital signage if you want? Or pardon me, not room sign, a room TV into a digital sign?
Yes, so what we do is we, within a hotel environment, we've got about 40,000 hotel rooms across most of the major brands. We're able to use the same hardware to support both in-room entertainment and interactivity. Plus, it may be in the lobby and in the conference rooms, it'll be digital signage. Mm-hmm. So we're able to support both use cases with the same platform, same hardware, and just put a different piece of software onto the platform. And customers really like that. And then if they want signage in the room, typically we can either run it as a signage channel, which is very popular, and it's a great way of generating revenue for the hotel without actually being too intrusive. But then they can turn it into more the interactivity, giving the guest the information they want, the services, the room service, what's going on in the area, flight information, etc. You know, weather, the usual things you'd expect to see out of an advanced system.
Now, what if they get more demanding in terms of, yeah, this is great, but we want a four-screen wide video wall.
Yep.
You can do that out of the system? No problem.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, we've got very large video walls there. And some strange sizes as well.
Okay.
So we do easily 2x2, 3x3.
And the same set-top boxes can do that?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, typically we might have to use a video controller.
Uh-huh.
But it depends. And one of the things, the projects we're doing at the moment, which is really exciting, is so some of the sports stadiums, they've now said, well, actually, we've got a lot of different systems here doing video. So a few of them approached and says, could your system control our perimeter boards?
Okay.
I don't like the perimeter. We've got perimeter board systems, okay, but it's a bit basic.
Yeah.
And why have I got a second system to do perimeter boards when I've already got one system doing all my concourse screens,
yeah,
all my hospitality screens in the suites?
Yeah.
Sure, I should have one system to do the perimeter boards because that's just another screen.
Yeah.
So we're looking now at how do we, how are we going? So surely we'll be able to manage the perimeter boards, mm-hmm, through our platform. That means training is easier, support is easier. One platform, they can potentially share the content, the media asset across multiple different devices, so giving
right,
greater commercial opportunity. So it's looking at all those sort of things to be a bit more integrated, to be honest.
What about interactive? Can you handle like interactive touchscreens and so on?
Correct, yeah. So we have we can support interactive with different player, obviously. So mm-hmm, either the screen has got interactivity, mm-hmm, or we use one of our advanced players to do that.
Yeah.
And we can support full interactivity, so they can actually, we can set up a frame, iframes, and then they can interact in it. And then after a period of time, we'll close it back into sort of a dumb signage mode, or the person using it can do that as well. And we're starting to see more and more of that coming into play. So we've done it, we've got an on-prem solution, we're just close to having a hosted interactive, mm-hmm, where we actually download a lot of the information they want onto the player and then just update it as we need it.
Mm-hmm. What's the biggest installation you guys have?
Probably Daytona's 1,600, 1,700 endpoints.
That would be Daytona like menu displays and everything else.
Yeah, so Daytona Speedway, I think it's around about that. There's that, or Wimbledon Tennis is 1,900 displays.
Oh, so you've got some signature installations.
Yeah, so those in the world of sports, I think they're pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Two well-known brands as well, so we're quite proud of that.
So they're looking at you or something like Cisco Stadium Vision, which God knows how much more that costs.
Yeah, we're certainly more cost-effective, let's say.
And maybe reliable.
And a lot easier to use. And we don't go end of life very quickly. And mm-hmm, we're quite easy to support and cost-effective to support. In the enterprise market, I think we probably have we have a few banks where we've probably got up to 1,000 endpoints split over about 8 or 9 countries,
mm-hmm,
where they're managing it all centrally,
mm-hmm,
and then they have regional offices, or some of them have branches as well,
mm-hmm,
and we're managing all that from one location, over geographically as well, which is quite challenging.
It takes time and real money to make and host this podcast, so I'm grateful for the continuing support of ScreenFeed.
Hi, this is Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. I hope you're enjoying the podcast as much as I am. I've loved Dave's blog since we started in the industry. It's now our 10th year at ScreenFeed, and we've grown to be a reliable partner for the industry, serving over 1,700 customers with over 100,000 screens globally, and we're currently getting 10 million content requests daily. But more important than that is that we make content beautiful, functional for the medium, and we help our customers meet their goals of increasing viewership and satisfying customers. If you don't know how ScreenFeed can help you, it's worth 5 minutes to browse our website or give us a call. If you're out walking your dog, driving home, or relaxing on your favorite chair, just make a mental note to check us out. Now back to the podcast.
Just going back to the system on chip displays, is your software actually using the embedded player, or is it just sending an IP feed to the screen and it's...
No, definitely not. So we've done a real port.
Okay.
So we use the player, and then we port it onto the browser that they use typically as mm-hmm. an application. And we were the first to do, when Samsung launched their SSP version 3, we were the first manufacturer to run IPTV with digital signage with Samsung's DRM link.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first deployment anywhere. We're now going to be the first company to do LG WebOS 3.0 with full IP multicast TV and digital signage. And I know that because we're ironing out the bugs in their software.
Right.
And so we will be the first, and that will go live in about 3 weeks at a major stadium.
Yeah, and that must intrigue the hell out of them, because particularly LG, at least in Canada, they have a pretty big business in hospitality, mm-hmm. selling hospitality yes. TVs. Yeah, so yeah. if they could use the same kit to also do the other stuff in the hotel.
I mean, yeah, so we already support LG on the hospitality platform. Mm-hmm. And that all works with multicast, but now they're moving all their screens into the WebOS 3 environment, very similar. You have Samsung moving everyone to all their platforms to Tizen, and right. you've got all LG moving all their devices to WebOS 3. Mm-hmm. WebOS 3.0. So the idea is that now once you write it, you can then, depending on the interface, you can make it a hospitality screen, mm-hmm. you can make it a signage screen, you can make it an interactive screen.
Okay.
All right. So it benefits us and it benefits them.
Okay. So let's talk about the company. You started 8 years ago.
Longer than that. We've been going now for. We started as a consultancy business.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Supporting telco operators. So our first big project actually was developing an on-demand platform for a major UK cable operator. Mm-hmm. Pretty much, as I said, I was one of the pioneers in delivering video to the home.
Yep.
Way back when at Oracle. So, Larry Ellison had a good vision. He's a bit early, to be honest, in his vision.
Yep.
All right, but he had the right vision. He was just 10 years too early. So, but I was part of that team. And then we got into products, as I said, 2005 was our first deployment.
Okay.
And that system is, I think, still running today. The 2006 one is definitely still running today. Mm. I mean, the hardware's getting a little bit old now, but it still works. And we've been, if you look at our product timeline, we spent the first couple of years just getting TV and video streaming working. Then we introduced signage in about 2008.
Okay.
Then we sort of revamped all the products a little bit, made them more robust. And since then, we had smart TV capability initially in hospitality in around about 2011. And then we've been getting into signage hospitality, signage smart TVs, mobile apps have really been in the last 2 to 3 years as the market's sort of moving quite rapidly in that space now.
Are the manufacturers getting better about smart TV and smart signs in terms of communicating with the developer world and not changing things without telling anybody?
Yeah, so they've realized that it's important that the problem you had traditionally is you'd buy a TV with some smart capability in it, and then that a year later that TV's end of life because TVs are constantly evolving.
And the code you wrote for it and everything else no longer works.
Correct. Yeah. And I think what I've seen now from the leading manufacturers is that they've realized that this is a bit of an issue.
Yes.
An issue for the developers, and it's
working with you anymore.
Yeah, and it's an issue for the customers.
Yeah.
So there's commitment now from the main manufacturers that certainly for the next 2 or 3 revisions of their screens, mm-hmm. there will be backward compatibility mm-hmm. with the code. So it's quite exciting that now when we put the work in, we know that at least until 2021, mm-hmm. that all the screens that they develop will support the code that we write in 2017.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's quite a big step for them.
Yeah.
And it will make the customers a lot happier. Mm-hmm. Okay, the design of the physical design of the TV may change as is human nature, that as we get different types of trends, but mm-hmm. the actual technology underneath it, or the software engine will still work.
Right.
That's massive.
You're in London. Mm-hmm. How does the company break out in terms of offices and numbers of people?
So the company is, we're not shy of 100 people now. I forget the exact number, mm-hmm. but we're not far off that. Obviously, we have our development centres based primarily in the UK. Mm-hmm. So we have a development centre in the coast, a little town called Poole, which is near Bournemouth. A lot of guys were originally at Marconi, which was one of the main sort of telecom manufacturers. So we've got quite a lot of wealth of experience, a few grey-haired guys, as they like to be known, but then we've got some youth who are a bit more sort of with it. So we've got a good balance of old and young, and I think that's good in a software company. Mm-hmm. Then we have our regional offices are really around, primarily around the commercial side and the technical services. Mm-hmm. So, and that means pre or post sales. We work with good channel partners as well. And we split that, as I said, we've got the UK's headquarters. We have a European office just because we felt we needed to get a wider reach.
Yeah.
We have country managers because we think, you know, particularly in Europe, and we have technical services and country managers in France, Germany, Turkey, Spain, to help with local language, because in those parts of the world, if you don't speak the language, you're not going to do business.
Yeah, just having a European office doesn't do it.
Exactly, you've got to speak the lingo.
Yeah.
Not so much, obviously, in the Nordics, they're more open to doing English.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously in the US, we think it's really important. We've got a sizable, we've got two offices now in the US, mm-hmm. New Jersey and Orlando. We're looking to expand that even further now into other parts of the US, because again, it's good we've got a US team and we're good on the ground, but we also need to be closer to the customer.
Mm-hmm.
So we're making the logical extensions from the East Coast, moving to Central America and then ultimately onto the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
We've got an office in Australia that sorts out the whole of that part of the world, so that, because again, it's important if you're going to be in Australia or doing business in Australia, you've got to have guys on the ground that can get to Australia, New Zealand, Fiji.
Right.
We've got an office in Singapore. Again, they like the fact that there is an office in Asia. The guys can speak Mandarin as well as Cantonese, Mandarin, as well as English, Japanese we speak as well. So again, we can do business in those countries.
Right.
And they like the fact that the team are an hour, 2 hours away, etc. And then we have an office now in Dubai. Again, guys there can do business in English or Arabic.
Yeah.
In fact, we're local in the region. We like the fact that we're there. We can get to the obvious places like Abu Dhabi, like Saudi, mm-hmm. etc. very quickly. So our strategy has worked in the sense that we went on and we also have one in South Africa as well. So we've worked very much on offering a local service, but at a global level.
Right.
And that's where, as I said, some of our biggest customers are the, we've got some of the major law firms, so we're the global standard for DLA Piper. And they like the fact we've got offices everywhere because they're a global law firm.
Mm-hmm.
We're a standard, you know, we're the global standard for people like Credit Suisse, for Deutsche Bank, for UBS, for Morgan Stanley. They like the fact that we are everywhere because
right.
they have offices everywhere. And whilst they like the fact they have a relationship at a corporate level with the appropriate office, they want to know that their staff in Hong Kong can liaise with someone in their time zone,
right.
their language, be
yep.
there within a certain time and work with them. And they like that. And that's worked. And that's allowed us to get more clients like that.
Privately held company?
We are privately held, yes.
So no outside investment at all?
No, not needed. We made profit every year but one.
Mm-hmm.
And then one was when we were sort of growing, which is
yep.
quite normal in any company.
Mm-hmm.
So we are profitable, self-funding, and looking for the next level, really, to take the company to the next level.
And what would that be? Like, I've talked to some companies who, their perspective on the next level is buying other companies and buying mm-hmm. their clients, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're pretty specialized. That would be, like, what would you buy?
Well, I think there's a few things. I think we need to increase our footprint in the US,
mm-hmm.
which we're actually doing at the moment.
Yeah.
So every time I think we're there with the US, we seem to double the size of the team. So,
mm-hmm.
so there's still a lot more growth to do there. And mm-hmm. obviously the South America, we haven't really exploited. I think in terms of, you know, we have some ideas about our products, where we want to take them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, there are many opportunities around video. People get signage and they get IPTV. And if you talk to the right customer, they get Citrix now. Well, not everybody gets Citrix. You know, you get to the right customer, it gets mobile. All right, we've got some plans, some other products we're going to look to develop,
which right.
Will give us a wider offering within the within. So that's how we're going to grow, by offering more.
Right.
More video-related services that customers want. And video, if you think of what's going on in the workplace, you know, when you and I started, we used to say, here's a manual, go and read it.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you've got the YouTube generation. They go in the workforce. There's no video to tell me how to do this or to do that. Oh, I'm not reading a manual. What's one of them?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, so video is becoming more prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's how we're going to grow, by offering a wider range of products and covering a larger geographical. And then if the opportunities come to acquire a company, if we're, you feel it's something that can accelerate, then mm-hmm. great. But I think, you know, we've shown that we're able to grow quite rapidly on our own. And I think we've been shown we're quite innovative and market leaders. I said
mm-hmm.
earlier in our discussion, it's amazing to see how our competitors have finally got it.
Right.
Just took them quite a few years to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And now I suspect as you get around the market, you'll be seeing other ones. Oh, I've just launched my my video over Citrix. Oh, I remember talking to a company called Triple Play just a couple of years ago. They'd already done that.
Yeah.
All right. And so we're starting, you know, I think we can be innovative. And if you stay innovative in a fast-moving world like video, you've always got opportunity to grow and expand before any, you know, I say we did the first stadium in South Africa on IPTV and digital signage. We now have 40 stadiums around the world. Some really iconic ones.
And
I think the US market's now got quite excited by the fact that, you know, these guys have got a lot of stadiums. Yeah, exactly. You know, the US has got more stadiums than anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
And we've got 40 stadiums. We have half the UK Premier League of our clients.
Yeah.
You know, people like Chelsea just won the Premier League. Manchester City, you know, Stade de France. You know, these are iconic stadiums in Europe. And now we've just got Miami Marlins, we just recently did. We've done the Blue Rays in Canada. Okay.
Blue Jays.
Okay. I'm not an expert on US sport. I have to admit,
Rogers
especially
Center,
especially baseball. It's definitely not my preferred sport. We've just won the International Cricket Championship. So we've just done that event.
Okay.
So we're now seeing cricket really starting to pick up, which again is a sport the US don't get, just like the Brits don't get baseball. So we're on the same page.
Yeah, I'm Canadian, so I sort of get cricket. I haven't figured out the scores, but I know how they score.
Exactly.
So I'm getting there.
So we're talking to three or four of the stadiums in the US now to grow, and they like what they see. So, you know, we were innovators, we were first, and it's shown that, and we've continued to that is our strategy. We will try and innovate and be ahead of the curve, and that will allow us to grow, take a lead on our competitors. And to be honest with you, in the world of tech, there's no prize for coming second. I really believe that.
Yeah.
You know, you're either first or you might as well not enter the race. Okay? Because catching up, unless you're a Cisco of the world that can buy a business to catch up, you're not going to catch. You're not going to catch up.
Right.
So I believe in that.
Does
as well.
4K present any challenge to you guys? Because big ass files, and you've got existing networks, and maybe players that don't support.
Correct. So we'll have a full end-to-end 4K platform by the end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
That's already been well worked on. So from technically, yes, not a problem. However,
it's the infrastructure, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So. You know, we'll have H.265 support as well, because we're, you know, at the end of the day, we're telecom guys that are coming to enterprise, so we always follow standards. But I think there are a lot of challenges that the enterprise need to be aware of. As you correctly said, everything's bigger.
Mm-hmm.
The files are bigger, the bandwidth's bigger. Do you really need it is another question,
It's a massive question, because they probably don't.
Yes, there are a few use cases where you probably could benefit from it. You know, I could see 4K video conferencing, for maybe the senior execs, that's kind of good.
Yeah, or explorations companies that have high-res imaging.
Exactly, maybe a bit of sports analysis. Yeah. But I would say a lot of use case is buzzwords at the moment.
Yeah.
And I think if I was a customer, and I was advising a customer, I would say you need to think very carefully. And we have one client at the moment who's building a new stadium, I won't say which one, and they were talking to me about the whole 4K thing, because they want to have the wow factor. I said, well, maybe you want the Wi-Fi, but don't have it everywhere. So what, we don't need 4K in the concourse.
No.
Maybe your top tier boxes, where the people are paying big dollars to be there, offer 4K because it's kind of cool. But remember, you're going to have to get a 4K camera. You're going to have an extra load on your network, a 4K TV in the box. So just think of the impact of making that decision.
Yeah.
Does it weigh the extra revenue or the wow factor or the that you want to achieve? And it's getting that balance that I think needs a bit of work. But it's as interesting and exciting, but I do think there is a place in 4K.
Mm-hmm.
I think in retail, you'll see a little bit of key parts of the retail environment. You'll see 4K, particularly in the fashion area, because it makes it look better. But I think in the general enterprise, I think it's hard to justify apart from the reception area and so forth.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
That's great.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 169, that's 16-9.net, every day. If you like this podcast, please also check out the companion 169 podcast called Projects. That's done by Michael Tutton, and there's a new episode every second Friday. 169 the blog and now the podcast are properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.